Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today I have an author to share with you with a topic that hits close to home for me, and that is caregiving. My very special guest is Joy Johnston. Her collection of essays about family caregiving, titled The Reluctant Caregiver, received a gold medal at the 2018 IPPI Awards. She received the 2015 Rick Bragg Prize for Nonfiction from the Atlanta Writers Club. Her work has been published in Chicken Soup for the Soul and other anthologies. She writes about dementia and caregiving on her blog, The Memories Project. And after our interview, you can find out more about Joy at her website, joyjohnston.com. And I just know that her words of wisdom will be comforting and perhaps eye-opening for some, so let's get going. Welcome to the network, Joy.
Thanks, Pat. I appreciate it.
I appreciate having you too, a kindred spirit, an author, and someone who's been through it. So I'm really excited about talking through this today. And I'm really looking forward to your perceptions on caregiving, because I didn't mention this to you previously, but I just spent the last 9 years caring for my mom, who back in 2008 was in hospital for a shoulder surgery and was having a heart attack in the post-op recovery room that went undiagnosed for 9 hours. And yeah, this permanently compromised her health to the point that I, too, stopped my career to care for her. So your book title, The Reluctant Caregiver, kind of resonates with me. So maybe for you, let's look back a bit in order to find out why you wrote your book. Give us a brief peek into your journey with both your dad and then your mom.
So my caregiving journey began with my father. He had Alzheimer's, and I was in my mid-30s and, you know, really focused on my career. My parents had been in good health up until that point. And then my father started exhibiting symptoms of dementia. And, of course, it's kind of a slow, gradual process. But then it became very clear that my father wasn't going to be able to live at home anymore. My father wasn't going to be able to care for him anymore. And I was a long-distance caregiver at that point. So my first retired to New Mexico, and I was with Atlanta, Georgia. So that's a long haul back and forth to visit. So that definitely complicated the caregiving issues. So my father spent the last year of his life in the memory care center. And, it was almost a mixed blessing, his passing, because anyone who has experienced a family member who has Alzheimer's, it's so cruel. The decline is so cruel. And I finally felt like my dad was free once he passed and Alzheimer's no longer had control over him. So then, just 6 months after my father died, I was still grieving, trying to process all of that. My mother suddenly got sick. My mother, who had always been in great health, was diagnosed with colon cancer, stage 3, had to have emergency surgery on her birthday, her 75th birthday. And all of a sudden, I'm an only child, no other relatives nearby. I had to abandon my life and go take care of her. And, you know, I didn't resent that. But I was not prepared to be a full-time caregiver.
See, that's so interesting that you say that you didn't resent it. I didn't resent it either. But boy, it stops you in your tracks and changes your whole life. And also, as you said, your mom was a vibrant person. And then to watch someone who looked after you all these years suddenly become, in a role reversal situation, that's stunning for you as the caretaker.
Yes, after all that time and watching my mother care for my father, and she did a wonderful job, but we were total opposites when it comes to personality and when it comes to perspectives on healthcare and end-of-life care, at least for my father. After my mom saw my father, you know, suffer in the last few months of his life, she decided for herself that she didn't want to prolong any kind of end-of-life heroic measures. So I was very thankful for that. But we butted heads when it came to making those choices for my father. And that created tension between us. And so then when I moved on to have to take care of her and help her make those decisions and become her medical power of attorney, it was a total role reversal, as you said.
You know, it's interesting that people are so fearful to have these end-of-life conversations when they're still young with their children or the people who may be looking after them, because something like that then could have helped you and your mom navigate your dad through your dad's wishes had he been able to have that conversation with you much earlier.
Oh, yes, I wish we had. And this is one of my areas of advocacy. Please talk to your family about these important decisions. End-of-life care, and also if you're incapacitated for any reason, it could happen at any age, it could be a car accident, anything, you need to have your choices written down, and you need to let your family know what you want to have done.
Absolutely. At the very minimum, a healthcare power of attorney. So you can have that conversation with that person. And, you know, I think people are fearful, like, oh, that's going to, they're going to be able to make decisions for me or get into my bank account. And I could never change that person. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions surrounding, especially that healthcare power of attorney.
There is. And every time I try to bring it up with my parents, my mom would dismiss it with the, you know, common refrain, we're not dead yet. You know, mm-hmm. As if I was trying to encourage them.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was, you know, to have that important discussion.
Well, since we're talking about it, do you have any ways that maybe an adult child could bring that up without it sound like that you wanting to off your parents? How do you bring that up to delicately get through that conversation?
Well, I've read a lot of advice, and some things I suggest are taking advantage of the holidays when, you know, ideally family is together. Go ahead and bring it up. Maybe if you have siblings, you can kind of join together, have a support system there. And use what works with your family. If humor works, then tell them, you know, hey, you don't want to end up like Aunt Edna in that horrible nursing home, right? You know, so that might not work for every family. For other families, it might be, you know, you take a more spiritual approach. You just need to use whatever works in your family.
Exactly. So whatever works, let's say, let's not fear it and be afraid of it, because I think the consequence is a whole lot worse, as you just experienced with your mom, trying to make decisions and no one really knows what the person wants. And now you two are left trying to figure out how to best navigate through that. So was there a moment that caused you to put pen to paper and write about your experience? Why did you decide to write about it?
Well, I'd written an essay that did win an award, Greetings from the Nursing Home, which won the Rick Brack Prize from the Atlanta Writers Club. And that was about my father's experience in the nursing home and the first time I visited him. And so I had started writing during the caregiving journey as almost a form of therapy. And so I continued that through my mother's experience. I had actually started a blog called The Memories Project right after my father died. And I was recording family memories on that blog. And then about halfway through the year, that's when my mother became sick. And then it became more of a active caregiving focused, advocacy, and just writing about my, you know, triumphs and frustrations as a family caregiver.
So you were actually chronicling some of your thoughts during the process with your mom.
Yes.
Yes.
And then when I wrote, shortly after her death, I wrote some essays, personal essays, and they were posted on the caregiver space. And on their Facebook page, And they generated a lot of feedback. And it was mixed. One of the most talked about ones was, why dying at home isn't all that it's cracked up to be. And it was a bit of a harsh assessment of my mother's experience with home hospice, which wasn't good. And I think hospice is great, generally speaking. I support dying at home. I think home hospice workers are generally wonderful people. And I also wish there were more inpatient hospice centers. But unfortunately, my mother's experience wasn't good, and I felt the need to express that. And I was, surprised at how many people said, same thing happened to my mother or my father. And, I felt like I was the only one. So I really felt inspired by that feedback to keep going and to be an honest voice for family caregivers.
Thank you for that. I noticed that your style was just out there. No nonsense. It is what it is. And you weren't trying to hide any of the truth. I did the same thing when my mom was going through this process, but I chronicled all of it through my radio show. So as these bizarre and untoward events were happening, whether it was in hospitals or doctor's offices or rehabs or nursing homes, the next week I was on the air talking about it. And the same reaction, people would call me and come up to me at speaking events. Yes, I've been through this as well. So thank you for your honesty. I think we need more of that if we are going to make a change in this whole system.
I agree. We really need a wake-up call for our country when it comes to caregiving issues. Mm-hmm. The population is rapidly aging. We do not have nearly enough professional caregivers or family members who can, sacrifice their careers or their lives to take care of their aging family members. We really need to address this issue head on, not just the government, but, private organizations, healthcare organizations. We really need a bipartisan effort. It's a bipartisan issue. Aging, dying with dignity should be a bipartisan issue.
Well, I agree with you absolutely. And so with people like yourself, maybe we could make some headway here. And you know what I really appreciated about you? Your chapter titles really give away the fact that you have a sense of humor, or appeared to have a sense of humor about all of this. I appreciated that. It wasn't the typical chapter titles. And you talked about the one of changing a colostomy bag. My dad passed away of colon cancer, and same kind of situation, stage 4, and he had his surgery on my birthday, so we have some similarities. And thankfully for my brother, he was able to do all of that changing of that colostomy bag. It was something I didn't have to deal with. But yeah, I mean, you lay it all out there, and you've really been through some kind of harrowing experiences. Talk about some of them, and maybe framed around a brand new caregiver that you're just thrown into this role. How do you deal with that?
Well, for me, I use online research and really gained a lot more wisdom from that than I did medical professionals. Because let's face it, they're busy. They don't have time to fully train a family caregiver on how to care for their loved one. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality in many areas. And so I learned how to change a colostomy bag watching a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. This gentleman was very brave to put himself out there and show exactly how to do it. And I'm forever grateful for him.
Wow.
I ended up being able to change a colostomy bag better than the nurses could. Mm-hmm. And the doctor told me, my mother's oncologist told me that they don't provide training in that area as extensively as they used to. So there's a education gap there. They cover it in one day in nursing school versus there used to be specialties. Ostomy nurses, mm-hmm, that would care for patients like that full time. So for family caregivers that are feeling nervous about being thrown into a situation like that, believe in yourself. You can do it. I mean, I had no medical background whatsoever, and I just pushed through. And I made mistakes along the way, but I ended up being a quite competent family caregiver, and I'm proud of that.
Mm-hmm. As you should, because it was self-trained. And, you know, it's one of those things like diving off the deep end. You're up on the top of the diving board and someone pulls the stairs out from you. You got to, you know, close your nose, close your eyes, whatever you have to do, and just jump in and deal with it once you're in the water. So they sent my mom home with a stage 4 pressure sore and said, see you next week. So, yeah, I became a bed sore guru. So, I, again, like you say, online, I learned a lot and studied, and through mistakes, you come out the other end and healed that bed sore. So, yeah, you're pretty much left out there by yourself. So we really do need some kind of program or something to help train these family caregivers if, in fact, we don't have enough medically trained folks to help out.
Right. And the RAISE Act is supposed to address some of that, where there's going to be actually caregiver plan produced at the discharge day, so that when families go home, they have an idea of what's expected of them, resources that it can use if they need help. And so hopefully that will help. I mean, you know, one piece of legislation won't fix everything, but, you know, at least it's a start. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned something also in your book about rural caregiving, where you're not in a big city, and that's a whole different ballgame.
Yes, that was a real challenge. First of all, the lack of medical choice when it comes to doctors, hospitals, specialists. You're really limited in choice, and that can make a huge difference in the quality of care. And then a lot of times you end up having to be transferred to a hospital in a bigger city because the small town hospital cannot care for complex cases. That's what happened to my mother. She ended up getting an hour and a half ambulance ride on her birthday to go from Ruidoso, New Mexico to Roswell, where they could treat her and perform the emergency surgery. It was a holiday weekend. So that really complicated the caregiving issue for me, because I ended up having to live out of a hotel room for a couple of months because it was too much of a distance to go back and forth to my parents' home and to visit my mother, who was at the hospital, and then a rehab center for 2 months because she developed complications, including blood clots.
Wow. And, you know, also in a small community like that, your pool of potential caregivers within, say, a nursing home diminishes. And so I don't mean this to sound rude, but, you know, you might have somebody who worked at McDonald's yesterday and now they're caring for your parent with a complex medical situation simply because there's not enough people to draw from locally.
Absolutely. And that was the real issue with home health care and home hospice. It was the same group in the small town. They had several very hardworking people, but they had way too many patients to visit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my mother didn't get a visit every day when she was in the latter stages of her life and actively dying. Her pain medication ended up lagging. It was difficult to get the morphine because they didn't have a huge stockpile on hand in the area. So those were real challenges. And then on my father's side, there was no memory care center anywhere near where my parents lived. So again, my father had to go to Roswell, and my mother had to take a bus an hour and a half each way to visit him in the memory care center there.
Oh my gosh.
So there was some real challenge with rural caregiving.
You even mentioned something about aliens, right?
Yes, Roswell. I have to admit, I mean, you know, I know Roswell is probably a lovely town with good people, but it's going to leave a bad taste in my mouth forever.
I'm sure.
Because of my parents' experiences.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't know what the lesson learned there is. Don't live near a small city. I mean, I don't really know what the solution to that is.
Yeah, you know, people want to age in place, and if they've always lived in a small town, you know, I hope that we can accommodate them, but it is a challenge. Do we, you know, provide incentives for young doctors to set up shop in a rural area? And you know, is that going to work? And it's a tough situation. It's a tough situation to you know, really bring in quality caregivers, as you mentioned. I talked to the home hospice group in Ruidoso, and they said, yeah, they were really struggling to find quality providers.
Mm-hmm. Got well-meaning people, but the training is just severely lacking.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had to leave a job that you had just begun and thought maybe after your dad passed, you were on your way to kind of regaining some normalcy. And then you had to leave your job. Is that correct?
Yeah, I had started at a startup, and I was only 2 months into the new job when my mother got sick. So I didn't have any FMLA, you know, benefits or PTO, anything like that. So I really just had to cut my losses, and, you know, they were gracious. I felt bad, but I had no choice. And I, you know, I don't regret the choice, because I would do the same thing again.
I say the same thing, but it devastates you. I had to quit a career. And so what do people do then financially? What's the solution?
Yes, that's the devastating part. And people don't want to talk about it, but the financial impact of a family caregiver who has to give up a career to take care of a loved one is absolutely devastating.
Yep.
And I ran up a lot of credit card debt. I also, with my mother's blessing, I also, you know, tapped into her savings and used some of that to live on while I was caring for her. Mm-hmm. I picked up some online writing jobs here and there, but nowhere close to what I was earning full time.
Yep.
And it took me over a year to secure full-time employment again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to affect me the rest of my life. That's, you know, 401k contributions that are gone, you know, never going to be able to get back. And I still have debt that I'm paying off from that time period.
I hear what you're saying. You will live with the consequence for the rest of your life. And as you say, you would do it again.
Yes, and you know, most family caregivers would, but we need support. You know, it's unbelievable the amount of money and time worked, hours worked, that family caregivers put in, don't get paid for,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, the country just kind of turns a blind eye to that. But you know, with you, I think it really hits home, you know, that we need to make changes.
I agree with you, and I think anyone who has gone through this process will agree as well. So hopefully there are some solutions we can come up with. I want to talk about a couple of the projects that you also share online. You have the Memories Project, which we mentioned briefly, and also the Respite Care Share. Let's talk about both of those.
Yes. So the Memories Project was the blog I started in memory of my father. I originally started recording a memory a day for a year, just so I could capture those memories of my father while, you know, so many things about him were fresh while I was actively grieving. And over the years, it's expanded. You know, once my mom became sick, I started writing more about caregiving, caregiver advocacy. And I've developed a nice, you know, active, really supportive community. And we support each other through our caregiving journeys. A lot of my followers have either lost or caring for someone with Alzheimer's right now. So I really enjoy it. I blog about once a week now, post about once a week. And I plan on keeping up with that because it keeps me in contact with, you know, family caregivers that are actively caring for someone right now.
And what's that website name?
MemoriesProject.com.
Easy. Okay. And then the Respite Care Share. Tell us about that.
Yes. So Respite Care Share was actually a idea that was brainstormed through OpenIDEO, a competition that they sponsored. They basically address issues around the world. It could be, you know, clean water, access to food. In this case, it was end-of-life issues. And they request people to submit ideas. So I submitted the idea, Respite Care Share, which is focused on giving caregivers a break, especially family caregivers, and to support them and provide resources so that they can take a respite, whether it be an hour, a day, or a week. And I presented it at the American Society on Aging at the ASA conference. And it received really good feedback. And I'm still actively working on it, actively working with partners to see if we can push the idea forward. I've also done some test pilots where I went to Amy's Place, which is a memory care cafe here in the Metro Atlanta area. And I presented the dementia caregivers with gift bags that included a supportive book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Living with Alzheimer's and Other Dementias, and also included a gift certificate. It varied what I gave them. It could be like for coffee or a restaurant, a movie, a massage, and a card where I thanked them for all the hard work that they do. And that pilot received a lot of positive feedback. So I would love to continue that and be able to do that on a larger basis, but definitely would require partners to support me in that.
Oh, I love that idea. As you're saying that, I'm thinking beauty salons might want to take part in spas and those type of things to, just as a way to market themselves, but also to help these folks locally. There's a lot of potential with that idea.
Yeah, and it was a top 10 idea in the Open IDEO competition.
Wow.
Out of about 50.
No, I can understand why. And the website name for that?
RespiteCareShare.org.
Okay, RespiteCareShare.org. Oh, you're full of good ideas, and I appreciate all that you're doing. As we begin to wrap up, let's maybe have you share what you think might be the biggest or the most important piece of advice you would give to anyone who is currently in that caregiver role.
Well, my biggest piece of advice is don't get too caught up in the medical aspect of caregiving, that you miss those opportunities to bond with your loved ones, because they may not be with you that much longer, and you will regret not spending the quality time with them and making those memories while you still have them. That is my biggest regret. I was so focused on trying to be a good caregiver for my mother and have, get all the medical aspects of caregiving down and being efficient that I missed out on just spending time with her. Talking about recording family stories, that's probably the biggest thing that I wish I had done. And so even though I know I was a good caregiver, I just wish I'd had the opportunity to just spend quality time with her.
Wow.
So I encourage everyone to do that.
It's like you're in my brain. Same thing. It's kind of getting a little emotional. You get so caught up in the busyness of it that you don't take the time to realize that the time is short. So just hang out and be and spend and talk. Excellent advice. I've not had anyone ever say that before, but it's huge. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. So we've danced around a giant topic here just to touch a lot of points of it, but is there anything that we missed that you really wanted to bring up today?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything from rural caregiving, dementia care, and then end-of-life issues. So that really taps into my areas of focus as far as advocacy.
All right. And your book is important. It's titled The Reluctant Caregiver. So share with us where folks can find out more about you, your different projects, and where they can purchase the book.
You can go to my website, which is joyjohnston.com. And there's a link, Amazon link. You can buy it also on any major online retailer. And it's also available in print, a paperback version on Amazon. And yes, you can find out more about me on my website. You can see my award, my gold medal that I just won, which I'm excited about, and read some snippets of reviews. And most importantly, you can contact me. I would love to hear back from fellow caregivers. I'd love to learn about local efforts, local organizations that are making a difference in caregivers' lives.
All right. So you are really dedicated to this. Joy Johnston, The book is titled The Reluctant Caregiver. The website is joyjohnston.com, J-O-Y-J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N, joyjohnston.com. And we have the memoriesproject.com and respitecareshare.org. Joy, when I saw your website, I'm like, yes, I've got to share you with others because there's so much to know and feel and get out there with this topic. So thank you so much for all you do, and thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you for having me back.